Wonder this morning how many times you've heard this story about the transfiguration of Jesus on the mountaintop. Chances are you've lost count. And perhaps it is so familiar to you that when the reading began this morning, it brought a mind yawn into your head, if you know what I mean. Or maybe it brought a real yawn to your face. But if we linger a moment with the story today and consider the first time that we were really, really scared, well, I think maybe the story can come to life for us in a new way and connect to our stories. And here's why. This experience was no yawner for the speakers in the text. And it may just have been the very first time that they were really, really scared that side of the crucifixion and resurrection. Terrified, even. I mean, consider the fact that Mark tells us in the version that Emily read from this morning that Peter was so terrified by the transfiguration of Jesus, he didn't know what to say. He blurted out this business about wanting to set up shop there on that high mountaintop and hang out a while. And if you check out Matthew's account of the incident, he reports that Jesus touched the disciples. A little act in that particular version of the story that I think we very often brush right over. The text says that Jesus touched the disciples. Why? Well, perhaps to help them back up into a standing position because they had apparently collapsed to the ground. So overwhelmed with fear were they. But Jesus had to touch them and help them up. And then the Gospel of Luke highlights the fact that the disciples were also terrified as a cloud came and overshadowed them, no doubt like a thick fog, as they entered the cloud along with Jesus, Moses, and Elijah. And for those of us who have ever driven through a fog so thick, even the headlights on your car cannot help you. You can't hardly see a few feet in front of you. That's a scary experience. I can't imagine the fear these folks must have been experiencing on that mountaintop. And all three gospel accounts of this story record the fact that the disciples were either instructed to tell no one about this incident, or that they chose not to tell anyone about the incident for some days afterward. And perhaps the reason they chose not to tell anybody about the incident was because they were so afraid. Maybe even afraid if they said anything about it, people would ridicule them, mock them. They wouldn't believe a word they said. Well, praise God that they obviously did tell their story at some point in time, because I think it gives credence to our stories. I mean, think about it. If these disciples told about how God's voice was actually heard, confirming who indeed Jesus was and is, the Son of God, the Beloved of God, and also talked about how Jesus' presence was experienced in a vibrant new way, then somehow I think that should validate for us in the here and now the possibility that God still speaks and that Jesus is indeed experienced in a myriad of fresh new ways even today. The big theological word for what's going on here on the mountaintop is theophany, literally translated an appearance of God. Most of the versions, in some fashion, would take careful listeners back to other biblical theophanies. For example, the high mountain and the heavenly voice of God from a cloud could take those of us who are reading through the Bible in a year. And even if you aren't, it will take those of the faith who know the story well back to the theophany in Exodus 24 and the call of Moses on Mount Sinai. The brightness of Jesus' clothes in Matthew's version, and even the reference in Mark's version today that Emily read from, about how the clothes were bleached with an incredible whiteness, brings to mind for us what? The resurrection of Jesus. When Jesus appeared in all of his glory. And of course, God's voice in each of the versions brings to mind for me the baptism of Jesus when the dove ascended and said, "This is my Son, with whom I am well pleased. And for me, that voice also brought to mind the many times that God actually spoke to Moses as Israel was wandering through the wilderness en route to the promised land. So the fact that this small inner circle of disciples were taken by Jesus to a high mountain apart and experience a dramatic encounter with God and His beloved Son, a theophany, if you will. The fact that they could get beyond their fear or terror of that, or of speaking about that, and ultimately were able and willing to tell the story. I think that should encourage us to tell ours. The fact of the matter is, at least for me, and I would hope for you too, that things are transfigured around me all the time so that I am able to experience the love of God or the presence of God or the power of God in unique and profound ways. But sometimes the fear and terror we have of talking about those experiences win the day. And we end up keeping all of those stories and moments to ourselves, wondering perhaps if they were real theophanies at all. Or were they just our weary minds and eyes playing tricks on us? Or perhaps we think to ourselves sometimes, you know, if I say something about this to someone, they will think I am absolutely nuts. And they might even make fun of me. And so we keep it all to ourselves. Folks, I believe the people of God, every single one of us, has a story to tell about how we've experienced the presence of God. Or how and where we need to experience the presence of God. I believe we all have experienced a transfiguration in some fashion in our lives. And to hopefully encourage us all to tell our stories, I invited at the 8:30 service Jim Clark to talk a little bit about his theophany. And if you don't know Jim, I want to encourage you to talk with him, give him a call and say, Pastor Bob mentioned you at the 11 o'clock service. I want to know what you said. It is an absolutely amazing story. Let me just tell you this. He was in a chapel at one point at the end of a retreat. And he had an actual experience where he saw Jesus extend his hands to him. And when he talked about telling this story, he actually shared it with his wife. And this last week was the first time his wife, Jen, had ever heard that story. And she said, why didn't you tell me that before? Maybe our experiences with the living God are not a wow moment like that. Jim will also tell you that he experienced God when he goes camping and witnesses an amazing sunset. He experiences God in the love of his children when they're all together at Christmas time. I asked Nat Narderis to come forward and share with you at this service a little bit about her experience with God, what that was like, what was comforting, scary. What was a God moment for Ned? Ned, if you would.
Pastor Bob called. Having a God moment. I had something happen. About 10 days ago. And this something came quickly to mind, and I'm going to try to relate this. This is a story. It happened the day of the Georgetown basketball game. It was a Wednesday night. And I was just going to a very simple booster club meeting at our high school. We moved the meeting time to 6 o'clock because everybody wanted to get home for the SU basketball game. We knew we had a 7 o'clock deadline. And it's a very simple meeting. We go, we discuss how we're going to fundraise, where the money's going to go, awards banquet, very simple. We had an unusual incident happen. Somebody who normally hasn't been to any meetings was there, and we had a confrontation. I mean, why would you have a confrontation at a booster club meeting? We had a confrontation. Some weird things kind of happened, and it kind of took all of us aback. And so the meeting did. We all kind of sped things along because, you know, the SU game was going to be starting at 7. And however, you know, the meeting ended up at 6:45, but there were four of us. I happened to be an officer, but the four officers kind of stayed behind because we wanted to discuss this incident. It was a little upsetting to us because, quite simply, we are there to discuss fundraising and spending money, and what happened really, it was kind of bizarre and very different. So, and as women are wont to be, when you have four women together, it extended a little bit past the start of the SU game. And as we were talking, we noticed a couple walking. This is the cafeteria, the doors were shut. We noticed a couple walking in the atrium. And we knew that night that there was a peewee wrestling match, and we were thinking, oh, that's what they're probably looking for, the bathrooms. So I opened up the door and said, may I help you? Are you looking for something? And they said, yes, have all the buses come in? This is a little after 7. And we, you know, yes, all the buses have come in. You know, what can we help you with? And they said, our daughter didn't get off the bus today. We think our daughter's missing. Well, you know, as a parent, that was really, really scary. I have been through, I'm sure many of his parents, you know, you look at that bus and your child doesn't get off the bus and what to do. And this young lady was in junior high and their first experience with a teenager. And so we brought the couple in and we discussed what we should do. And fortunately, one of the officers of the Booster Club happens to be the school board president who has our superintendent on speed dial. We said, you've got to call our superintendent. He's got to know. In the meantime, you know, we're talking to them, trying to help them sort out their thoughts, because then you have the realization how difficult it is to think in times like this. And started to say, you know, who'd she hang with? Start calling people. We started to talk them through. But then we made this really difficult decision when we told them we thought that they should call the sheriff's department. And the mother lost it, and you know, I'm breaking up right now because to think of what it must be like to and maybe have the realization, you know, our daughter's gone and we don't know where she is. So we and what also got tough, we said call somebody, and they'd call, and it was an old number. The number's been discontinued. They finally got a hold of somebody, and they were given a number to call. And that number was disconnected. In the meantime, our superintendent arrives along with our vice principal and the sheriffs do. And I guess one of the things by us being there to talking with this couple is we kind of called through the beginning questions that the sheriff maybe would have. Luckily, the superintendent's there. He's able to get other phone numbers. We try to connect the pieces. Where, you know, they did not know. They waited. This had been a substantial amount of time because they kept thinking she's going to get off this bus. Now she's going to get off the late bus. Didn't realize we no longer have an extended 5:30 late bus. The mother was very, very upset when they had to call the sheriffs. It was very upsetting for all of us. The sheriff arrives, and again, this is one of those moments that also hits you as a parent. When he asked for a description of the child, of their child. I mean, we're sitting there, and this is a surreal experience. The four of us stayed. We all of a sudden you realize it puts things in perspective. It's like, what's an SU game? These people don't know where their daughter is. So we all stayed. You know, last thing from our mind is what's going on with the SU game. And one of us went and made phone calls. They determined that. They think she got off a bus with a friend in Nedra. So we said, well, okay, let's start calling some places in Nedra. So we're calling the Pizza Hut and the Dollar General in Green Hills, giving descriptions, trying to help out what we could. They did determine that their daughter had gotten off with a friend earlier. Through many phone calls, and luckily you have the sheriffs, they were able to get a phone number, only to find out the daughter was no longer there. The daughter and this friend had taken off. Now we're talking 8 o'clock at night. Still don't know where this child is. I remember I looked at this gentleman, at the father, and I'm thinking that, you know, we were here. the four of us happened to be here because we were discussing something for this couple. And I looked at him, and he has his yarmulke. He's Jewish. And I looked at him and I said, you know, the pastor of our church always says you go nowhere by accident. And he looked at me and he said, I truly believe that. I truly believe that. So they decided to, the sheriff came in, he was talking to them again, going through the questions. Now we've determined that maybe she's wandering someplace with a friend. The sheriff has alerted, put an all points bulletin out, they have a description. He's going to go to Nedro. He asked the couple, would you want to drive around? And they said yes, because it's just something to do. Our superintendent and our vice principal also took off. They all went to Nedro to drive the streets, figuring it's 8 o'clock at night. You know, they're small. We should be able to find them. After everybody had left, the four of us just sat there looking at each other. Because this had been just one of those experiences, like, wow, you know, we went to a booster club meeting, and to have and to start questioning, you know, well, but I feel like that if I went through that as a parent, and then I said, you know what? As our pastor always says, you go nowhere by accident. Do you realize tonight, if that person hadn't come to the booster club meeting, created a disturbance, had a confrontation, we would have been out of here. We would have been gone. We stayed there because we wanted to discuss something that was, you know, a very difficult situation. There was nobody else in the building. You know, the rest of the building was locked. There may have been some janitors. But we were there for that reason. And what we found out was a couple things. They did manage to find the young lady with her friend. Unfortunately, they were found at a gang house in the city. Fortunately, they were found before anything happened. And I guess it kind of put the SU game in perspective, but that also had an happy ending because we got time, all of us got home in time, to see if the game went into overtime. And we all got to see the ending of the game, which has been, in reality was probably the most important part of it. So, you know, it was a lesson where, you know, you go nowhere by accident. We have a reason why God has put you there. We all had that feeling. The four of us, after it was over with, and just before we left, we all just kind of stood there and looked at each other and took some deep breaths and went, wow. And another story that will tag on to this, one of the three of the other ladies, one has been struggling with God. She has gone through some unspeakable tragedies in her life. And she called me probably a couple days ago and said, you know, I've gone through an awful lot in life, but I'm starting to see God's plan. I didn't see it. I said for the past couple of years, it's like, God, why are you putting me through this? And she said, all of a sudden, I'm starting to see God's plan for me. And that is my story.
It doesn't have to be a wow. It can be a booster club meeting. Marcy Demz after the 8:30 service said to me, her God moment was when her dad died. She made the decision at the end of that week after the funeral and everything to come here to worship. She was feeling alone, devastated, did not want to be around anyone, but felt so compelled to be here. And she said, I am so glad I did, because for me, that was the most profound God moment in my life. To sit in the sanctuary I love, with people I love, and she said, I felt the arms of God around me. A God moment. We all have a story to tell, and somebody needs to be blessed by your telling your story. So that other people won't miss the glory of God. And with that, a very quick God moment for me. Wednesday morning, I finished my sermon Tuesday, all except the ending. I wasn't sure how it was going to end. I get in the car at 6 o'clock in the morning and go to the gym. I never listen to the Mars Hill Network. But for some reason, the radio was set at the Mars Hill Network. And more specifically, the song that I want to play for you right now, a music video of a song called Don't Let Me Miss the Glory. It's written by Joe Beck and Carl Carty, but it is sung in this music video by a guy named Gordon Mote, who, given the title of the song, Don't Let Me Miss the Glory, the great irony is Gordon has been blind since birth and is a Christian singer-songwriter and is singing this absolutely amazing song, Don't Let Me Miss the Glory. Watch.
Just as we were blessed by Matt's story, by Jim's story, somebody needs to be blessed by yours. Don't hold back. Tell your story. Let's pray. God, thank you for the power of the song, the power of Matt's story, the power of Jim's story, the power of ours. And thank you, Lord, that those early disciples got beyond their fear and told us. Grant us that same privilege. And may we proclaim boldly your grace in our lives.